When we come back, we'll be joined by Miyoko Hakiji, All I Could Be, My Story of a Woman Warrior in Iraq and Her Efforts with the Sexual Trauma Project. This is Insight on Business, the NewsHour.
Inside of Business, the NewsHour comes from RE/MAX Real Estate Concepts, with offices throughout the Des Moines Metro, the Fireplace Superstore where comfort and good looks happen, and the Computer Club. You want your computer to work, and they can help.
5:42, 18 minutes now before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the NewsHour, ladies and gentlemen. You've got a question or a comment of anything that we do here. We do monitor Twitter before, during, and after the NewsHour. And if you want to see some of the photographs and some of the video and some of the other things, the backstory, we like to call it, about the NewsHour, you can find our Facebook page. All you have to do is go to Facebook and put in Insight on Business, the NewsHour, and you will find us just like Miyoko did. I was so impressed. She friended us earlier this afternoon. I go, wow, she's on the show this afternoon, and she's already finding us out there. Wanted to do a little background check. This is going to be interesting. Army veteran and soldier at heart for life, member of the first National Women Veteran Speaker Bureau and spokesperson for the Military Sexual Trauma Initiative with the Veterans National Recovery Center. She's an Iowa State University alum in journalism and psychology, an actress, and she's got all kinds of things going on. Welcome to the NewsHour, Miyoko Hakiji.
Pleasure to be here.
Did I do that all right?
You did.
Boy, I was sweating it. Well, all right. First of all, thank you for your service to this country. I'm sure that you hear that often. And can I ask you about that before we get into what we're going to talk about?
Sure.
I notice that being said by lots of people these days. It's something relatively new, I think, that's been experienced in the past maybe 4 or 5 years. Before that, people really didn't go out of their way to say, hey, thank you for your service. What do you think has fostered that?
Well, the country's been at war for the last 12 years, and I think people recognize that, you know, 99% of the population doesn't serve in a military uniform.
There you go.
And for that 1%, you know, who are serving and sacrificing, that 90% for the liberties and luxuries they enjoy really at least owe some gratitude, if not more, as a community in order to support those service members.
Well said. I couldn't agree more. I think that, and we don't do politics on this show, but I think that's one of the interesting things is because we've been at war for so long, Miyoko, that people kind of get used to it. I mean, it's just kind of going on all over the place, and no one really gets touched by this other than the individuals that are going to battle and their immediate families, it seems like, and the rest of the country is kind of divorced from this. So different than what it was in the Second World War, when everybody, I mean, you know, even school kids were asked to bring tin to school, and everyone was committed to the win. And this is kind of like, well, it's happening somewhere else. It's got to be a little bit of a lonely feeling sometimes as a member of the military.
I think that's absolutely true. The communities just aren't as involved in veteran issues as when more community members were actually serving. But I think after this long stretch of time, the communities are starting to see the effect. We're starting to hear about military sexual trauma, post-traumatic stress, suicide. It's starting to affect our communities. And so people are starting to ask me now when I go out and speak about my experiences, what is it that I can do? Because I'm starting to see this, and I want to be able to be a part of the change that does something positive for these people who have given so much.
Author Miyoko Hakiji, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about your book a little bit. Why did you write it?
Well, there were a few reasons. I think while I was there, right away, I realized I was living a story that was very inaccessible to the general public. I knew my parents certainly couldn't understand what I was going through, and I knew my hometown was pretty far removed as well. So I wanted to give people at home the opportunity to see what it was like to be a soldier in Iraq, especially a woman soldier. Mm-hmm. Secondly, because two unit members died, I wanted there to be a living legacy for them, something that went on beyond a 30-second news program or a few articles in the paper. I wanted them to have something that was going to be around for a long time to tell the story, not just of how they died, but who they were when they lived.
And in that business that you were in over there, that was the trucking and the transportation, very, very dangerous side of the military. I remember news stories when Operation Iraqi Freedom was going on about how convoys were hit often. And I think some of the first casualties, if I remember correctly, were females that had been driving trucks. Would that be accurate?
That is accurate, and that was an interesting part of the change that happened in the spring with the generals of all the service branches coming together and saying, you know, we need to rescind the ground combat mm-hmm. exclusion policy because we've seen women die in war, and we've seen women serve valiantly in war. And so in order to address that service, we really cannot deny that people, even in service support, are a part of the casualties of the operation.
When we talk about trauma, and we're all aware of post-traumatic stress, that's something that gets talked about. But this, the sexual nature of the terror that is felt by some members of the military is relatively new, I think, for many of us to grasp or to understand. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think in the history of the military, at least in about the last 30 years, this situation has existed. We'll have a new story that comes out that will bring our awareness to it, and then it sort of dies. I mean, there really hasn't been a time where the issue has been brought up. There's been a real change that's gone into effect that has made it so that women can live and work safer as they serve in the military. And so that's one of the things that we want to address with our organization.
One of the things that has happened recently with the military, there's been some action to take disciplinary decisions outside of the commanding officer of wherever that station happens to be, and then put it into more of a judicial look at whatever the incident might be. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I certainly support Senator Kirsten Gillibrand's initiative in the Military Justice Improvement Act. That actually failed yesterday, so that taking that out of the chain of command is not going to be a part of the mm-hmm. defense authorization bill. But some of the other measures in order to protect victims and to restrict commanders from being able to overturn a guilty verdict in a sexual assault case, those things are being addressed. So there was a very small movement for change, but there's still a long way to go in order to make sure that we don't have a year where we have 26,000 sexual assaults going on in the service branches.
That's a lot of assaults. And had that been going at it with a relatively small number of people, when you stop and you think about it, that's a big number because there's so few people in the military anyway. And, if that were that many assaults nationwide in the nation, people would get upset about that, you would think. But this is even a larger percentage. What's the driver for the sexual assault issue and the trauma that's going on in the military? What do you think it is?
Well, I think the military operates as a fairly close society, so it is easier for a sexual perpetrator to exist there if they are not rooted out, if they're not brought to trial, to then reoffend. And I think a lot of that, the number of cases are the result of people who are reoffending. That's certainly a part of it. There's a command culture issue that exists. We talk about it all the time, and all the generals have a zero tolerance policy. And the talk about zero tolerance has had zero effect on actually bringing those numbers down at all. So those are certainly factors.
Has this been something that's been increasing over the years, or is this a level?
I would say in 2010, there were 19,000 cases that the Department of Defense estimated. So in 2012, 26,000. So that percentage went up. I think the deployment factor is really important in that. I think it's a lot easier for women to be assaulted in a combat zone where the proportion of them compared to men is that much smaller. And also they're that much more isolated.
Are you aware of this phenomena in other countries' military?
Yes, actually. And some other militaries have taken action by introducing the step that Senator Gillibrand talked about, which was taking it out mm-hmm. of the chain of command. So Great Britain, Canada, Israel, other armies that are established have recognized that this is a problem if we're going to have men and women serve side by side. So in order to have a remedy for that, we really need to take that necessary step.
Having close friends in the Israeli army, and knowing a little bit more about that than probably I should, I've always been impressed. Men and women serve side by side on an equal basis in Israel. And to be honest with you, I've not heard of this issue being an issue in Israel. Is there something about the culture, the male-dominated culture that the United States military brings to the table that tends to push this forward?
I think so. I think there's definitely a command climate that's just been perpetuated over the decades about the roles of women. And I think that started with the way that we excluded women from jobs, from different roles based on gender alone. And I think the recent action where the three Marines completed the infantry course and then were denied placement in an infantry unit is, you know, an overt example of sexism in a way that they have actually completed the exact same physical standards. They're ready for the job and they're still not allowed to be integrated. So I definitely think that there is some resistance there among the command structure to just embrace the idea that women are ready to do the job. They volunteered for it. And if they're going to volunteer to serve in that capacity and give their life, then it's their right.
Miyoko Hakiji, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dig into this a little bit more. The Military Sexual Trauma Initiative with the Veterans National Recovery Center. What is it, and what do we hope to accomplish? All that and more when we come back. This is Insight on Business, the NewsHour.
Support for Insight on Business, the NewsHour, comes from the Creamer Law Firm of West Des Moines, a partner for closing held companies. West Bank of West Des Moines, for business, their West Bank strong. And the Warren County Economic Development Corporation of Indianola. Warren County is open for business.
We're going to get right into this because we don't have a whole lot of time left. Miyoko Hakiji is an author, and she is also heading up something called the Military Sexual Trauma Initiative, a part of the Veterans National Recovery Center. Tell us what this is and what's going on and why we need it.
Well, I think there are a lot of women right now who aren't willing to present themselves at the VA to get care, either because, first of all, they're a part of the backlog where there's just a lack of services and they're waiting, or they feel re-victimized by going back into a system that's mostly male-dominated. So this is going to be an opportunity for women to get together about once a month, do some social activities, restored in an environment where it's safe, where they feel respected, and be able to do some of their personal work that they need to in order to, you know, get over the situation that they have with their sexual trauma issue. So we're going to offer mentors, support, and some holistic therapies that aren't supported by the VA that we know from research really work and can be pathways to wholeness and healing.
I would imagine there are some out there, and I'm going to have to be very careful how I do this, and it's not going to come out very well, detractors that would say, you see, I told you women shouldn't be in the military. Is that part of the problem?
Well, I think people use that as an excuse, and I call that victim blaming. If you look at a woman and you say exactly that, you walked into that, that's just a way to say that the perpetrator didn't commit a crime and they're not responsible for what they've done. You showed up, therefore, and that's absolutely wrong. And that's part of the education program that will be offered in the initiative, is to allow people to see that this isn't something that they did to themselves, and they need to feel empowered about that as they get started on their journey.
This is very similar, what you're explaining to me. This sounds very similar to what we do in the civilian world relative to rape crisis and prevention, where it's an issue of re-victimization of the person who is victimized in the end. Is this pattern somewhat after that?
Absolutely. I think it's very difficult for a woman to approach that situation and make her mental health in this particular incident a priority, because you have to face the very nature of the thing that happened for you. And so really, in order to put some very important safeguards in place for the environment to be safe, having a door guard, using an all-women's group are all things that are encourage women to take that step.
How do people find out more information about this?
They can go to the Veterans National Recovery Center website. There will be a special link up for the MST2 program soon, and that's at www.vnrc.us, or you can also go to my book website or find me on social media, and I'll put you in the right direction.
And Miyoko is all over the place on social media. Miyoko Hakiji, I am so grateful that Bob put us together. This is very interesting. Thank you so much for coming by the NewsHour.
Thank you.
Thanks so very much for letting us ride home with you. This has been an interesting evening. Deborah Salowitz, Miyoko Hakiji, fascinating stuff. Thanks so very much. We'll be back tomorrow at 5 o'clock. For all of us associated with Insight on Business, the NewsHour, Dustin Halderson, our technical director, Mary Sayer, our liaison with the Des Moines Radio Group, the voice of Insight on Business, Jimmy Olson, I'm Michael Libby. Have yourself a good evening. Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man.